This is Describing Colors, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Envy Envy and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated G and is Jen, featuring the relationship between Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington, with additional tags for past Steve Harrington Nancy Wheeler, pre-season 4, Hurt Comfort, Light Angst, Coming Out, Platonic Soulmates Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington, Aromantic Steve Harrington, Aromantic Robin Buckley, Aromantic, The Mortifying Ordeal of Realizing Your Arrow in Front of Your Ex, Queer Platonic Relationships, Stobbin Month 2023. This is the first story in the series, Arrow Stobbin Cinematic Universe. Summary. Two unknowingly closeted aromantics try to explain crushes to each other. It goes about as well as could be expected. For Stobbin Month, Day 8, Confession. It takes 3 weeks of working at Family Video for Steve to start thinking he might be bisexual. Not in so many words. Robin keeps forgetting to bring her zines, so he's operating solely off all the terminology she can remember well enough to explain it to him, which is not a lot. But he has a general sense that there's more to the world than being strictly gay or straight, and that he might be a part of it. See, the thing is that Steve's always kind of been subconsciously operating under the impression that being gay is for other people. Not in a homophobic way or anything. It's just that every time he hears about a gay person, it's always some celebrity or a person from one of the big cities, and never, like, someone down the street. So every time Steve just thinks, oh, that could never be me. The same way he'll look at Bruce Springsteen and think, oh, I could never be famous like that. It just honestly never occurred to him. Meeting Robin blew that right out of the water. Being gay is for Robin, which means that being gay is for normal people from small towns, which means that being gay could, in fact, be for Steve. He doesn't really do anything with this new information for those first 3 weeks, but then he makes the mistake of asking Robin a question. It's a slow day. And they've finally found the rhythm of their new job. That, and the nightmares are starting to slow down, so they've been getting more sleep. Which means they're both hopelessly bored. Robin's stacking the returns so the spines will spell out different words when you read them vertically, and she keeps trying to get Steve to guess what she's spelling, except he's terrible at it. He gives up after the last word. Revolution? And instead starts trying to build a bowl out of the rubber bands they have left on the counter. So, he asks casually, like he isn't about to ask an incredibly personal question. How did you know you were gay anyway? Robin considers this for a moment while she grabs more tapes, rolling the rubber band off them and handing it to Steve, who accepts it gratefully. Girls are pretty and boys aren't? She says, like it's a question. She shrugs. How did you know you were straight? Steve hums thoughtfully, wrapping another rubber band around his slowly growing rubber band ball. It's a good question, mostly because he isn't sure. I don't know, he answers, because it's the truth. And he and Robin made a blood pact the day after Star Court to never lie to each other. I never really thought about it. Robin tilts her head. Well, what do you think now? Steve thinks about it. He's fairly certain he still likes girls. Robin's right, girls are pretty. But he doesn't know how he feels about guys. His crush criteria doesn't translate perfectly, so it's hard to tell, but he compares his list against some of the boys he remembers. First point, physical appearance. This part is always easy to tell with girls. They put more effort into what they wear, and people are always talking about which girls are the prettiest. Out of the boys, Billy was always wearing things that flattered his body, and Carol talked a lot about how hot Tommy was. Billy's hair was nice, too. Steve definitely remembers that. Second point. Nervous butterflies. Steve used to feel nervous around Nancy all the time before they started dating, and he still feels that a bit when a pretty girl walks into the store. He doesn't remember feeling butterflies around Tommy, but now that he's thinking about it, he definitely felt something when he was playing against Hargrove in basketball. Third point. Caring about what they think of him. Originally, this was based more around how girls react to him. If they blush when he talks to them, if they watch him play basketball, if they think he's cool, that sort of thing. But that doesn't really apply to any of the guys. They're more subtle with their appreciation, so it has to be more about what Steve wants them to think. With Nancy, he always wanted her approval, for her to think he was cool, but also that he was responsible and reliable and someone worthy of love. He also, Steve realizes, cares a lot about Jonathan's opinion of him. He wants Jonathan to like him and to trust him a lot more than he thought he did. He's not sure about Billy, though he's positive he would have cared a lot if Billy had shown up before the Upside Down, because pre-Nancy Steve cared a lot about what Tommy thought of him, too. Fourth point. He thinks about them a lot. This one is always the easiest. He thought about Nancy a lot before he asked her out. There was just something about her that made him want to be around her all the time. He wanted her to like him, to talk to him, and tell him about all the things she was interested in. He also wanted to kiss her, because she looked like she would be good at it. He's pretty sure he doesn't want to kiss Byers, but he does also think about him a lot, so maybe he's just repressing it or something. He definitely thought about Billy a lot. But it's hard to tell how much of that was because Steve wanted to think about him, and how much was because he beat the shit out of him that one time. Huh, Steve says, after a long period of silence. I think I had a crush on Billy Hargrove. Shit, Robin says, eyes wide. Really? And maybe Jonathan? But that would have to only be a little one. He's not very pretty. Or at least no one at school besides Nancy seems to think so. He supposes Byers is kind of handsome in a wet cat sort of way. Robin squints, tilts her head again. I'm pretty sure you have to think someone's hot to have a crush on them. I mean, it's definitely on the list, but I don't think it's, like, mandatory or whatever. Isn't it, like, if you have more yeses than nos on the list, then it's a crush? The list? Yeah? Steve gives Robin an odd look. The checklist for symptoms of having a crush. How else are you supposed to know? Robin gives him an odder look. You just know? Like, you look at a girl, and she's really pretty, and you think, wow, I want to look at her all the time. But what about the butterflies? Robin laughs. Steve, that's not a real thing. That's like a thing they invented for romance novels. It's a metaphor. Steve squints. No, I'm pretty sure it's a real thing. Don't you look at a girl and feel this, like, fluttering in your stomach? That's just being nervous, she says. I get that around everyone, usually when I'm talking too much. That doesn't sound right, Steve says, going back to his rubber band ball now that he knows the conversation is going to take a while. The fluttery feeling is a good thing. Being nervous is bad. You can definitely feel good nervous. It's like anticipation. Steve hums doubtfully.
No, I'm pretty sure that's a third separate thing. The butterflies are like...
You know when you're around someone a lot and you want to be closer to them and you want them to like you? And whenever you talk to them, you feel like a fluttery kind of nervous. A good nervous.
He can remember it so clearly, even when he hasn't felt it in months.
It was the feeling he got around Nancy. The feeling he got around Robin before she came out and they became friends.
He feels it for Jonathan, too, sometimes, which feels a little pathetic.
What kind of idiot has a crush on his ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend?
Robin frowns, adjusting her tower of tapes.
Well, yeah, but that's not a crush. That's just wanting to be friends with someone. I felt that for you, and I definitely don't want to date you.
Steve's face floods with heat, cheeks burning as he tries to process that. The feeling he always associated with something special, something meaningful. And it's a feeling Robin had for him. A feeling he had for Robin that she reciprocated.
You... really?
He didn't even feel this flustered when Nancy said she liked him back.
Robin looks up at him, smiling when she sees his face.
Yeah, she laughs. Of course. I mean, I was kind of mad about it at first, but how could I not? We're soulmates.
Yeah, Steve says softly. We are. He doesn't know what he did to deserve her.
Steve squeezes her hand, dropping a kiss on the backs of her fingers the way he started doing a week ago. It always gives him a giddy little thrill when she seems to like it as much as he does. And she grins, wide and unrepentant. Then she purses her lips thoughtfully, twisting and waving their clasped hands.
Okay, wait. So if the butterfly thing you feel is just friendship, and you don't think you need to find someone attractive to have a crush, then, like, what else is there?
Steve brings their hands up to knock her gently on the forehead.
Robin gives a little yelp and almost topples over backwards.
That is the crush, Rob, he says. That's everything on the checklist. You like how they look, you get butterflies when they're around, you want them to like you, and you think about them a lot. That's like everything they list in a romance movie. I don't think I'm missing anything.
Robin squints.
That can't be right.
I don't know what to tell you. Maybe it's just different when you're gay.
Robin considers this for a moment, then shakes her head.
No, that doesn't make sense either, because I've read gay romance novels, and they're the same as straight romance novels.
They're both silent for a while after that, holding hands behind the counter while they try to figure out what's going on. It's an odd place for miscommunication to spring up between them, especially since they're usually so in sync that they can understand each other perfectly, even if they don't agree. But this doesn't seem to be a case of conflicting opinions. Steve just genuinely has no idea what Robin's talking about, and from the look on her face, she doesn't understand him either.
All right, Steve says, after glancing at the clock. There's only a half hour left on their shift, and the place has been dead for hours.
We need an objective opinion, and anyone who's trying to rent a movie at 7:30 p.m. on a Tuesday needs a reality check anyway. Grab your shit. We're heading to Nancy's.
Robin gives him a little salute and starts flinging piles of tapes back into the returns bin.
Steve shrugs off his vest, grabs their bags, and meets Robin at the door right as she's flipping the sign around to say closed.
This is weird, Robin says once they're in the car. Like, it's not just me, right? This is really weird.
Yes! God, it's so weird, Steve complains, slapping a hand on the wheel. Robin makes a loud noise in agreement.
It's like, I don't even care which one of us is right anymore. I just want to know why we can't figure it out.
Exactly. What happened to our twin brains?
Oh, God, Robin says, turning her whole body to face him.
What if our telepathy thing is just gone? Is our soulmate thing over? Did we run out the warranty?
Don't even joke about that.
Steve levels a stern finger at her face, and she bites at it.
I don't care if the universe decides we're not soulmates anymore. I'll make you my soulmate. You aren't getting rid of me that easily.
Robin gives a loud sniffle.
I think that's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
Well, get used to it, Buckley. It's you and me till the end.
And that's how Nancy finds them, clinging to each other outside her front door at 7:45 on a school night, looking like they're on the verge of tears.
What's going on? Is everything okay? She asks, reaching out to touch Robin's shoulder. Is it a code red?
Might as well be,
Robin grumbles as she shoves their way inside the house. Steve stumbles after her, arms still tangled with hers.
We lost our twin powers, Steve explains, and Nancy makes a face he's only ever seen directed at Mike.
She sighs, looking up at the ceiling before pinching the bridge of her nose and shoving them toward the stairs.
We'll talk in my room, but I'm kicking you both out at 9.
He catches a glimpse of Mike's incredulous face from the living room before they completely disappear upstairs.
Still feels weird coming in from this direction, Steve says offhandedly as Nancy ushers them into her bedroom.
I'm not the one who thought it would be cool to climb in through the window all the time, Nancy replies with a pointed look.
Tell me you didn't, Robin groans.
He said he was like a ninja, Nancy confirms with a smirk.
Dingus? How did anyone ever think you had any game?
Hey, Steve protests. I'll have you know I was really good at dating. I always made sure to hit at least 3/4 of the points on the checklist on every date.
Another checklist?
Robin grips him by the shoulders, shaking him gently.
What is it with you and lists?
The list would explain a lot, Nancy muses, sitting back on her bed.
What's that supposed to mean?
Steve always feels a little raw when they discuss their relationship, and he's not all that into the idea of listening to her tell him he was a worse boyfriend than he thought.
It's not a bad thing, Nancy assures him, though he's not sure he believes her. It's just, sometimes it felt like you were playing a role.
Oh, Steve says, relieved. He shoots her a smile.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what dating is, right? It's like theater. You go through the list and play your part until the date's over, and then you judge how good it was based on how much fun you had. Like a game.
Robin's staring at him like he's a particularly challenging puzzle.
I think you lost me there, Stevie, she says. I don't know, but that doesn't sound right.
Guess it is, he insists. Otherwise, there wouldn't be classic dates or cliches. There's literally a... He snaps his fingers, trying to remember the word.
Script?
Robin supplies.
Script, yes, thank you. There's a script for dates. Why would there be a script if you aren't acting?
He turns back to Nancy to see if she agrees, only to find her sitting there looking stricken.
Oh, Nance, is everything okay?
He reaches out to put a hand on her knee, but she shrinks back.
You really mean that, she says faintly. You really... the whole time?
She looks like she's seeing him for the first time, and she doesn't like what she sees.
Except that would only make sense if Steve had just told her something she didn't already know. But she has to know that, right? I have no idea what's going on right now, Steve admits.
Did he say something dumb? Robin asks, leaning forward. He does that a lot, but it's not on purpose. I don't really understand what's wrong either, but if you explain it, then he can apologize. Or we can. Oh, God, was it me? Did I say something? Nancy shakes her head, holding a hand delicately over her mouth while she tries to regain her composure. Steve waits patiently for her to be ready. He doesn't want to rush her when he doesn't even know what he did wrong in the first place. Finally, Nancy sighs. She looks at Steve, her lips twisted into a pained frown. Steve, she says softly, are you saying dating is a game to you? Steve hesitates. Isn't it? He asks. And it's the truth, but he knows it's the wrong answer from the way her face crumples. Robin looks back and forth between them. Hold on, that wording... She cuts herself off, and Steve begs her to continue with just his eyes. She seems like she has a better grasp on what just happened than he does, which isn't unusual, but right now he really wishes it was, and he needs her to explain it to him before he hurts Nancy even more. Robin grimaces, but she nods and turns back to face Nancy. Nancy, are you asking Steve if he was just playing with your feelings? Steve's eyes go wide.
What?
Nancy looks uncertain.
Isn't that what he said? That he was only pretending to care about me?
No, Steve shouts, standing up.
What? How could you even think that?
You just said dating is theater, that you were acting.
Because it is. Dates are like, they're like dinner parties or holidays. There's a list of expectations for what will happen and how you'll behave, and you don't have to follow it perfectly. But if you don't do enough, then it's not recognizable anymore, right? That's just how it works.
It's really, really not, Nancy says. And he's never seen her like this before, not since she was worried about Barb.
Dating is like, it's, you do it because you want to. Because you want to spend time together. It's not acting. You're supposed to be yourself.
Steve looks back at Robin, feeling lost.
She doesn't seem like she understands it any better than he does, but she looks the same way she did when she was trying to decipher the Russian code, all narrow-eyed and focused.
Okay, but that's... Steve makes a frustrated noise.
How is that any different from hanging out as friends, then?
Now Nancy looks confused.
What? That doesn't... Wait, I want to know this one too, Robin chimes in, because that's kind of what we were fighting about before and we still haven't figured out the answer.
Nancy just stares at them for a long moment before whispering,
I think I need to call Jonathan.
Robin scrunches up her face.
Byers? What does he have to do with this? I'm going to be honest, Nancy says, punching Jonathan's number into her phone. I don't really understand what's going on right now, and I'm hoping he'll be able to help.
She looks back at their stunned faces.
He's better at the emotional stuff than I am,
she says with a half-hearted shrug.
It doesn't exactly help to lighten the mood, but the fact that she's trying anyway means a lot.
The phone starts ringing, and they all huddle around it so they can get their ears as close to the speaker as possible. As the one making the phone call, Nancy gets the part with the receiver, so Steve and Robin sit shoulder to shoulder at her back.
Byers household, you've reached Joyce.
Hi, Ms. Byers, Nancy says politely. It's Nancy. Is Jonathan there?
Oh, he's just upstairs. One sec.
Joyce says, followed by a muffled shout of,
Jonathan! Nancy's on the phone! How are you holding up, sweetie?
Oh, you know, Nancy laughs. She's saved from having to elaborate by a click over the line.
Nancy?
Jonathan asks, and Joyce makes her goodbyes. Once they're alone on the line, Nancy speaks up.
"Do you have a minute?"
she asks, and her voice sounds strained.
"Yeah,"
Jonathan says, sounding panicked.
"Yeah, of course. What's wrong?"
Nancy starts, which is never a good sign.
"I have Steve and Robin with me, and they're asking questions, but I don't really understand..."
She trails off, and there's a long pause on the other end.
"Okay,"
Jonathan says, and it seems like he can appreciate exactly how terrifying it is to hear Nancy admit she doesn't understand something.
What sort of questions are we talking about?"
"Well," Robin pipes up, and Jonathan makes a surprised little noise. "Steve and I were talking about crushes earlier, but we couldn't agree on what it's supposed to feel like. So we came to ask Nancy, because she knows everything, except we got a bit derailed, and now we're talking about what dating is supposed to feel like, but Nancy can't agree with us either, so now we're asking you."
They all sit with this for a moment.
"Right,"
Jonathan says.
"Okay, hold on."
There's a sound of movement from the other end, and a loud thunk that's probably the phone being set down on a table. The click of a door, faint voices, and a bit of rustling before Jonathan picks the phone back up.
"I have a feeling we'll be here for a while, so I woke Argyle up."
Steve glances over at Robin, who makes a face and mouths, "What's an Argyle?" Steve just makes a face back, mouthing, "Dog?" with a shrug.
"He'll probably be more help here than I will, and..."
He breaks off here with what sounds unsettlingly close to a hysterical giggle.
"I'll be honest, I'm a little too high for this conversation. No such thing."
A smooth, calm voice states. Steve assumes this is Argyle, who is probably not a dog.
"Oh, guess we'll find out,"
Jonathan says, not sounding very optimistic about it.
"Afternoon, dudes and dudettes,"
Argyle says cheerfully.
"How can we be of assistance?"
"Wait, isn't it like 5 o'clock where you are?" Robin asks. "Why were you asleep?"
"Never a bad time for a nap."
"Okay, can we focus?" Nancy says, and she's starting to sound a bit frustrated.
"Absolutely,"
Argyle says serenely.
"Okay,"
Jonathan echoes.
"All right, let's focus on the dating thing first. What was the problem with that?"
Steve clears his throat, feeling a little nervous. He's surrounded by people whose opinions matter to him, and he's somehow managed to make one of them upset already, so he's not all that keen on repeating himself on the off chance it just upsets more of them. Still, it seems like it's also the only way he can clear it up, so he braces himself and starts explaining.
"So, I said that dating is like theater. Because it is. There's a script, and everyone has a part to play in whatever."
The noise Jonathan makes here is not comforting.
"But Nancy says that dating is just spending time with someone because you want to. But that doesn't make sense, because then what's the difference between dating someone and being their friend?"
"Oh, that's easy,"
Argyle says when no one else speaks up.
"It's a date when you want it to be."
There's a long pause.
"That doesn't sound right," Steve frowns. "If that's true, then what's stopping you from calling anything a date? Aren't there, like, rules?"
Argyle hums.
"Lack of romantic attraction? I don't know, bro chacho. I think you could call anything a date as long as you're with your partner."
"I guess that makes sense," Robin says,
looking over at Steve. I mean, we do a lot of stuff that could be called a date, but it's not dating because we say it's not. Oh. He never thought of it that way.
But then, that doesn't explain...
He trails off.
Your scripts?
Steve nods. Well, I mean, I get where you're coming from. It makes sense. She starts. Nancy makes a quiet noise of disagreement. But I think you might be trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. Steve turns this over in his head. The thing is, he's not sure that's true. He can't even explain it to himself, but there's definitely something that isn't quite fitting yet. Contrary to popular belief, Steve doesn't just go around doing things for no reason. He looks at Robin, and Robin looks at him. Maybe their soulmate telepathy will let him borrow her brain for a bit, because right now, his own just isn't cutting it.
It sounds like maybe you're trying to make up for something.
Jonathan says, a little callously, but Steve can tell he isn't saying it to be mean.
Like you think you aren't a good enough date if you aren't pretending.
Which, ouch! Jonathan immediately backpedals and tries to apologize, but Steve isn't listening. Robin has her thinking face on. Robin makes a sharp little noise in her throat and stands, dragging Steve up with her. Steve and I need to have a little soulmate conference. We'll be back in a minute. What? Nancy says. And Steve can hear it echoed by Jonathan through the speaker before he's pulled away. Robin drags him by the hand out into the hallway and over to the landing. Hey, Mike! She shouts down the stairs. There's some stomping, and Mike's grumpy face appears.
What do you want?
Which one's your bedroom?
Mike gives them a scathingly suspicious look. The one right beside Nancy's? Why?
Great, we're just gonna borrow it for a minute. Thanks! Robin pulls Steve away and into Mike's room, ignoring Mike's shout of, Hey! She shuts the door, sits him cross-legged at the foot of Mike's bed, and collapses down in front of him.
What's this about, Rob?
Steve asks. Robin takes both of his hands in hers and twines their fingers together.
I didn't want to say it in front of everyone else, she whispers. But, Stevie, did I ever tell you I've been on a date with a guy before?
Steve tilts his head, trying to figure out how exactly this fits with everything else they're talking about.
No, I don't think so. Why?
Well, it was just the one, she says, alternating between squeezing his left hand and his right. He tries to match her rhythm. And it was kind of terrible, but underneath all the stress and the nerves and the knowing that I could never like him the way he wanted me to, I actually had fun. You know why?
Steve shakes his head.
Because I was doing what you do. She says gently. I was playing a part, following the script. I spent the whole date pretending to be a girl at the movies with her new boyfriend, and I had fun. And then I went home and cried because I knew that I couldn't keep pretending I was normal anymore.
Oh.
Robin looks softer than he's ever seen her. Hesitant and concerned, in a way she should never have to look around him. Steve gives her a small smile, even though the world as he knows it is crumbling around him, and brings all their hands to his lips so he can kiss her fingers. She slumps, looking relieved, and smiles back.
Okay,
Steve says quietly. He pauses, looking down at their hands.
So, are we thinking I'm gay?
It doesn't feel right, and when he looks back at Robin, she doesn't look any more certain than he is. She shrugs awkwardly.
Maybe.
Steve makes a frustrated noise.
But that doesn't... I liked Nancy. I loved her. I wasn't faking that or pretending. The dates, yeah, but not the way I felt about her.
No, I get that, Robin agrees, nodding quickly. But maybe you're half gay? Or half straight?
Steve shakes his head again.
That doesn't feel right either.
Robin leans back, using their joined hands to brace herself so she doesn't fall over. She stares up at the ceiling, tongue between her teeth, in the way it is when she's thinking hard about something.
Okay,
she twists her shoulders like she's weighing her options.
What if it's just friendship, then? Like, we know you feel your emotions really strongly. What if you were in, like, in friend love with Nancy?
She hoists herself back up to look at him in the eye, and Steve squints, considering it.
Maybe. But I've had friends before, and it didn't feel like that.
Well, what about me?
What do you mean?
Robin pokes in between the eyes.
Our friendship, what you feel for me. You said you had a crush on me, right? Like Nancy? Did your feelings actually change, or did you just start thinking about them differently?
Oh, that's a good question.
Steve lets go of Robin's hands so he can lay down to think about it, staring up at Mike's ceiling.
There's a blue vinyl sticky hand toy stuck near the light.
He thinks back to the fluttery feeling he had when he and Robin were working at Scoops, the way he felt when she teased him with the "you rule, you suck" board, the way he looked at her when she was translating the Russian code. He thinks about them trapped in the elevator, the panic he felt at the thought of her getting hurt, his desperate need to keep the Russian's attention on him instead of her. He thinks about the pit in his stomach when he confessed to her. He thinks about the odd feeling he had when she told him she liked Tammy Thompson, the feeling he couldn't name.
Oh. Relief, Steve says to the sticky hand on the ceiling. I was relieved.
Robin's face comes into view, peering down at him. Her curtain of hair surrounds the two of them, blocking them into their own little world where all he can see is Robin and all she can see is him.
When you told me you were gay, he clarifies, looking into her slowly widening eyes. I was relieved. I didn't have a crush on you. I just really wanted to be your friend.
Robin's face crumples, and she sniffs loudly, hiding her face in his shoulder. He wraps his arms around her shoulders, holding her close while she pretends not to cry.
I love you,
she whispers, into the soft skin of his neck.
I love you too, Rob.
Steve presses a kiss into her hair. They stay like that for a long minute, just soaking in each other's presence.
Steve really, really doesn't know what he'd do without her. I'm still confused, though,
he says, looking back up at the blue sticky hand.
How long has that thing been stuck there for?
And the others are still waiting for us in Nancy's room.
Shit.
Yeah, Robin says, climbing off him and wiping her eyes.
Fuck. Am I wearing mascara? Did I get it all over my face?
Steve glances over at her, wiping the tears from his own eyes.
No, you're fine. You're a bit blotchy, though. Do you want me to get a cold cloth from the bathroom?
Robin waves him off.
No, I'm always blotchy when I cry. It's fine.
Robin opens the door and then stops, looking down at something Steve can't see. He peers over her shoulder to see what distracted her and locks eyes with a very grumpy Mike Wheeler. He's sitting right in front of his bedroom door, back against the opposite wall, with both his arms and legs crossed. His eyebrows are so furrowed, it looks like he'd be crossing those too if he could. "Are you two done yet?" he demands. "How much of that did you hear?" Robin fires back. Mike's scowl falters, and he looks away. "I didn't, only some of it," he admits. "But I won't tell anyone." "You'd better not," Robin says sternly, "or I'll kick your ass, little Wheeler. I don't care that Nancy will murder me right after." Mike's scowl comes right back. "Well, I won't," he announces. "I'm not..." He stops, then mouths the word, "homophobic." Steve can't help it. He smiles. "Thanks, Mike," he says. And Mike looks disturbed to hear his first name coming out of Steve's mouth. "We appreciate it." "Whatever, just get out of my room." Robin gives him a jaunty little salute and pulls Steve back over into Nancy's room. Nancy looks up when they enter, and her eyes are a little red, like she's been crying. "They're back," she says into the phone, then turns back to Steve and Robin. "What happened to you two?" "Don't worry about it," Robin says, waving her off as the two of them settle against Nancy's back again. "We need to have that conversation about crushes."
"Are you sure?"
Jonathan asks.
"Because we can continue this later. In fact, we probably should. No better time than the present,"
Argyle counters leisurely. "Yeah, what he said," Steve says. For someone he's only known over the phone for about 5 minutes, Argyle's a pretty cool guy. Jonathan sighs.
"All right. What's the problem?"
"Okay," Robin starts. "So this is what Steve and I originally came to ask Nancy about. But we were talking about what our crushes are like. And Steve says he has, like, a checklist of... what did you call them? Symptoms. Symptoms, right. Steve has a checklist of the symptoms of having a crush. And I was like, that's not how that works. Because it's not. You don't have to, like, test if you have a crush. You just know." "But that doesn't make any sense," Steve cuts in. "Because not every crush is the same. It's like a combination of things, but you don't need all of them. Obviously, Nancy hit all four because she's special. I know she's pretty." "No," Nancy echoes. "I always got butterflies around her. I wanted her to like me, and I thought about her all the time. But I've had crushes where I didn't think about them all the time, or where they weren't, like, conventionally pretty." "But that's the thing," Robin insists, poking him repeatedly in the side. Steve bats her hands away. "That's not what a crush is. That's just wanting to be friends with someone, which is what I already said. A crush is when you see a pretty person and you're like, wow, they're so hot. And you just want to look at them all the time. I told you the butterflies thing is just nerves." "See?" Steve says, craning his head back to look at Nancy, who seems baffled and unimpressed. "This is what I meant when I said our soulmate powers are broken. I have no idea what she's talking about." "Nancy, you have to fix it," Robin pleads. Nancy rubs her temples with her free hand and sighs. "First of all," she says, "you're both wrong, so I don't think there's a problem with your soulmate powers."
What?
Steve and Robin say in unison, which does actually make him feel a little better.
"Second of all,"
Argyle continues cheerfully,
"there's no right or wrong way to have a crush. I'm sure everyone feels it a little differently. They're feelings, bro. They're meant to be personal."
"Sure," Nancy says, sounding a little exhausted. "Yeah, that. Argyle's thing both did and didn't make sense to me, so I'm just going to ignore that for now," Robin says. "But what do you mean we're both wrong?" Jonathan says, a little awkwardly, like he's just realized this conversation has a lot more layers than he thought.
Well, I don't want to imply anything, and I don't think any of us are going to judge,
he continues, which is not a comforting way to preface any sentence. Steve trades a somewhat panicked look with Robin.
But, well, I don't think either of you is describing an actual crush.
Steve forces a laugh. What? No, that's not. What makes you say that? Robin says at exactly the same time, which only makes the two of them sound more suspicious.
Again?
Jonathan says.
I'm not implying anything. It's just... Steve sounds like he's just repeating something he heard from a movie, and Robin... There's no connection between her and the person she likes. It's like she's talking about a painting or a celebrity crush.
Wait, are celebrity crushes real? Robin whispers, and Steve shrugs. He always thought it was a joke, or some kind of metaphor. Like a short way to say, this is a cool celebrity I really like. I think they're cool and I watch all their movies. Or something. Yes, celebrity crushes are a real thing. Nancy says, and Robin jumps. Did you think I was joking when I said I liked Tom Cruise? I mean, yeah, Steve says. Kinda. Wait, Robin says. So you're saying a crush isn't about finding someone hot?
It is,
Jonathan says.
But that's not all of it. A crush is... It's not something you can quantify. It's not something you know. It's something you feel. It's like describing a color. I can tell you that red is bright and passionate. The color of luck and blood and anger. Then you can get a sense of it. But you won't truly understand until you see it.
That was surprisingly poetic, Steve says.
Thanks. I read a lot of poetry.
Robin makes a frustrated noise, drumming her fingers on her knee.
Ugh. Stevie, I feel like we need to have another soulmate conference, but I don't even know what to say. Do you understand what's going on right now? Because I don't.
Steve has a sinking feeling that he might, actually, but it doesn't make sense. It's like this. If Steve's crush list describes his feelings for Nancy perfectly, and his feelings for Nancy and his feelings for Robin were the same, and his feelings for Robin aren't romantic, then there's only one answer that makes sense. But again, it doesn't make sense because that's not how any of this works. Hey, Rob, he says. And there must be something in his voice, because when she turns back to him, her wide eyes are full of concern. Remember what I said about relief? She nods, because they're on the same wavelength. They always are. They're connected, like two little stars in the same constellation. She's always been there, in his same patch of sky, but he felt so alone before they were drawn into telling the same story. I think I would have felt the same if it was Nancy there instead of you. And it sounds horrible. Like he's saying she's replaceable, or like what they have isn't special. But what they have is special, and the proof is in the way she understands him completely. He's not saying Nancy could have been his soulmate if Robin wasn't there. He's saying... If Nancy had told him she was a lesbian when he first asked her out, he would have been relieved. Nancy makes an inquisitive little noise, but he doesn't look at her. He can't, because he isn't done. Because him and Robin are always on the same wavelength, even when no one else understands. And I think, he continues... Unsure, but also a little too sure. If you were me and Nancy was you, You would have been relieved too. Robin's eyes are impossibly wide, and she looks like she wants to deny it, but she knows he would never lie to her, even without the blood pact.
We're describing a color we've never seen, Rob. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Jonathan was right.
Robin snorts once, her eyes still the size of dinner plates. And it's like the dam breaks between them, and then they're both laughing.
Oh my God, Robin says. She's laughing so hard she can't sit upright, so she slumped over into his side, her face pressed against his shoulder.
Oh my God! What kind of an example was that?
You know I'm bad at this, Steve protests. It was the best I could do on short notice. I don't work well under pressure.
What? So you thought telling me I'd be relieved if I confessed to Nancy Wheeler and then she told me she was a lesbian was the best way to communicate that?
Behind them, Nancy chokes. I meant if she told you she was straight, Steve says petulantly. But yeah, that too.
What? Nancy asks, sounding strangled.
Not now. Robin dismisses. We're having a moment!
Her voice only shakes a little bit, and he knows it's because they're both remembering Jonathan's clumsy promise to accept them no matter what, and the way that it's been almost a minute, and no one started yelling slurs or calling them disgusting. It makes Steve's heart feel almost deliriously full.
Listen, Rob. If I'm wrong about what a crush feels like, and you're wrong about what a crush feels like, then neither of us knows what a crush feels like, which means that neither of us has ever had a crush.
Okay, but that doesn't make sense. I don't think you can do that.
Why not? We literally just fought a giant flesh monster from another world, like, a month ago.
Robin frowns thoughtfully.
Okay, fair. But, like, hypothetically, what are the chances you're just saying this because you don't want to be a guy who had a crush on Billy Hargrove?
Billy Hargrove?
Jonathan repeats incredulously.
I'm not going to lie to you and say it's not a bonus, Steve admits, because really, who would? But I'm not lying about anything else either. Just, okay. Gun to your head. Really think about it. If Nancy asked you on a date right now, would you or would you not spend the whole time acting?
Robin screws up her face like she's trying to explode him with her mind, but thinks about it. She slaps her hands over her eyes and groans, leaning back with her tongue between her teeth again, so Steve knows she's actually thinking it through.
No, she wails, throwing her hands down to slap every part of him she can reach. Ugh, I totally would. What the fuck? See? Ow! You ruined Nancy Wheeler for me, you asshole! You shouldn't want to date my ex-girlfriend anyway. What happened to best friend code?
Well, apparently you didn't like her either.
Steve, running on the new high of relief and Robin, turns to Nancy and takes her face in his hands. She looks at him like she's never seen him before, but this time it's not a bad thing.
Nancy Wheeler, I love you now as much as I did when we were dating, he says sullenly. It just turns out that I don't actually know what romantic love feels like. Sorry.
Her expression softens, and she places her free hand over one of his.
I think I'm beginning to understand that, yeah. If it's any consolation, you were the best friend I ever had, he offers.
Robin doesn't count. She's me.
Nancy's nose scrunches up in confusion, and she laughs.
She's what?
Me, Steve says, and Robin nods. And I'm her. We're each other in every way that matters. Hey, Rob, do you think that means you actually did get to date Nancy Wheeler? Robin tilts her head. You know what?
I'll take it.
I don't, Nancy laughs. Sure, why not? God, Robin mutters. I can't even celebrate that because apparently I don't actually like women. I don't know, Steve says, knocking their shoulders together. You still think they're hot, right? Well, it's gotta account for something. Robin considers this. She shrugs. Works for me. It ends like this. After they all calm down, Nancy, Steve, and Robin are all sprawled out over Nancy's bedroom floor with their heads tucked together around the phone. Jonathan and Argyle, who congratulate them very sincerely after they managed to explain what was going on, are laid out on Jonathan's bed on either side of his phone, casually braiding each other's hair. You know, Steve says into the companionable silence, this makes a lot more sense than thinking I had a crush on Jonathan. Jonathan starts coughing so hard he falls off the bed. The end. Author's notes. They'll totally be back at Nancy's in a couple of months to have the same phone call breakdown, except this time over their shared lack of gender. In case anyone was curious, here's the specifics. Robin's an arrow ace lesbian, sex neutral. She experiences strong aesthetic attraction, but only towards women. Which is why she thought she was an aloe lesbian, because she thought that's what all attraction is. She does get squishes, aka friendship crushes, but she can tell they're friendship-based because she doesn't connect them to her aesthetic attraction at all, which is why she's able to identify Steve's squishes when he can't. Steve is a sex-favorable arrow ace. He doesn't really experience any kind of attraction towards anyone and relies on his knowledge of what other people consider to be attractive. He can tell when someone's objectively pretty, but he doesn't feel any draw towards them. He likes sex, and he likes the closeness of traditionally romantic gestures, and he gets really intense squishes, so all of that combined made it almost impossible for him to notice he doesn't actually experience romantic or sexual attraction to anyone. Basically, Robin thinks attraction is when you find someone really, really pretty, and Steve thinks attraction is when you like spending any kind of intimate time with a person. Touching, kissing, hugging, going for dinner, sleeping together, etc. On paper, they're kind of right, but in practice, they're completely missing the point. And with regard to Steve's relationship with Nancy, it was a QPR, which is why they're all so confused about it, and why Steve has so much trouble figuring out it wasn't Romo. Because it wasn't typical friend feelings either, so what else could it be? And yeah, unfortunately, that would have been part of why they didn't work in this AU. But only a small part. Because they were in an unnegotiated half-queer platonic relationship, half-Romo relationship, which is really not something you want to try unless you have proper communication, which they didn't. If any of the romance stuff doesn't make sense, sorry. That's because I'm also Arrow, and I realized partway through that I'd have to explain romance, something I don't understand, to two aromantics, who also don't understand, from the point of view of an alloromantic, strange alien beings to me. Not exactly my smartest move, but I did open this can of worms, so I guess I have to lay in it. Come chat with me on Tumblr. Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded as part of Summer Podfic Swap 2025 for Fairy Fae 13. We matched on Stranger Things and also a little bit on Thor, but mostly on Stranger Things. And I did have a moment looking at your letter where I was like, oh my God, formerly DF, please help me. I don't match on anything. And she sat me down and she was like, literally, all of these things are things you enjoy. Why are you saying you don't match? And I don't know, I got hung up a little bit on sort of the, like, what do I do? If not AU, what do I do? And it was just sort of dumb moment of bleh. But yeah, this is absolutely an incredible, delightful joy of a fic. Thank you so, so much to Envy Envy for having blanket permission to podfic and for putting into words this absolutely beautiful explanation of the Steve and Robin of it all that was 500%, if you're an idiot and I'm an idiot, who's driving the bus? That was just beautiful to me. While not invalidating any of their relationships with the other characters and also not, like, invalidating their relationship with themselves in a way that was just absolutely glorious. Hang on to your hats, folks. If I do not get the entirety of this podfic series, or series, podficked, rather, it is in the to-do list because I love it. I love this verse so much, and I love the, like, the closeness is just everything. And I love you, and it's amazing, and I love you back, and it's amazing, but also we're both kind of looking at the world a little bit askew and cockeyed from what we expect to be seeing, and it's the Steve and Robin of it all is just so beautiful. So, Fairy Fae 13, I hope this hit the tropes and things you enjoyed of Steve and Robin, a romantic character, a sexual character, and a little bit of angst and hurt comfort, because it's not necessarily hurt comfort, but there is the coming out moment and the everything of it all. And the joy. I know you said you didn't want fluff, but this was joyful to me and is beautiful. So yes, happy Summer Podfic Swap 2025 for you listening who are not Fairy Fae 13. Check out the rest of the collection. It is up on the AO3 and there are a lot of works with a lot of people and a lot of joy to be had. So yeah, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.